Hey everybody, you're listening to Swift News. This is the weekly news show all about iOS development where I take everything I found on Twitter, newsletters, Slack channels, YouTube, you name it, I curate all that information into a weekly show for you to make sure you stay up to date. Now this is the audio version of the show that I usually do on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/SeanAllen, all about iOS development. And on that show, I'll usually have the blog post up and I'll be highlighting the text that I'm talking about. When I show videos of the AR kit examples, you can actually see them. So this podcast is for people that are on the go and can't sit in front of the computer but still want the news. However, if you do want to see all those visuals that I talk about, be sure to check out the YouTube video. All right, with that out of the way, on to Swift News. What's going on, everybody? It's Monday. Time for Swift News. You're getting glasses, Sean, today. I'm having some issues with my contacts, so we got glasses today. You don't care. Let's just dive right in. Up first, we have an article by Antoine Vanderly all about, you know, using Alamo Fire versus URL Session. And this article is extremely timely for me. I talked about it a little bit on the live stream yesterday about how I'm debating on, you know, getting rid of Alamo Fire and just writing my own networking layer. So that's what this talk's about. Now, what is Alamo Fire if you haven't heard about it? Basically, it's an elegant networking in Swift. So it's a wrapper around URL Session to basically make things nicer and easier, and we'll get into more of that. But just for a little bit of background, it's a really, really, really popular library, 164 contributors, 30K plus stars, 42 million downloads. I use it in all my apps. I love it. I just talked about removing it. So I just said I love it, but now I'm thinking about removing it. And the reason being is because it does a lot. It can do, it's very, very robust. And for basic networking calls, like just simple gets and posts, like which the app I'm working on does, we don't do anything crazy. You may not need everything that Alamo Fire can do. So bringing in that entire library might not be necessary, and it might be better for you and your app to write your own. I did a video a while back all about how to find out lines of code in your app. And when I did that, when I did it without the third-party libraries, it was like 7,000-8,000 lines of code, I think. When I brought in the 4 or 5 libraries I was using, you know, Alamo Fire included, it went from 7,000 to 8,000 to almost 60,000 lines of code. So you're bringing in a lot of code that might not be necessary. And that's kind of what I'm struggling with. As much as I love Alamo Fire and as great as I think it is, you know, I think I might be in a position where I need to write my own networking layer. That might be better for my app. Anyway, that was my personal rant. Maybe you're in the same situation, but essentially Antoine did a poll. You know, what do you use most? Alamo Fire URL Session. 64% came back with just URL Session. So that was pretty interesting. I thought I would have thought a lot more used Alamo Fire. But again, if you're not familiar with Alamo Fire, here's, you know, we'll kind of show you in the code. It basically, again, is a wrapper around URL Session. And here is a typical Alamo Fire request here, these few lines of code. Wow, that looks rough when highlighted, but that's what I'm pointing out here. So it's pretty neat. You can see what's going on here compared to when you're doing just the URL session. It gets a little more unruly. There's a lot more you have to do. And Alamo Fire, again, I've worked with it a lot, is very, very easy to use once you get over that initial learning curve and cleans up your code a bit. So I can definitely see the appeal there. You know, here's some power here. The request is built up within a single initializer. URL encoder is encoding parameters by default. You know, validation is done inline with a simple one-liner. There's definitely benefits to using it. Again, the downside is, you know, you may be bringing in a sledgehammer to do something a small little hammer can do. That's kind of the analogy between like bringing in the entire Alamo Fire or just writing your own wrapper. But again, Antoine has a good article kind of comparing, you know, when you should do which one. And I want to hear what you think. Again, we have Antoine's poll, but I'm curious what you think out there. Do you use Alamo Fire over URL Session? And if you do, have you thought about writing your own? Or do you think you're fully using everything Alamo Fire, you know, can do? So curious to hear your thoughts. Up next, we have an article from Alan Pikes that says navigation should be boring. Yes, thank you, yes. And we can introduce this, you know, this way, you know, talking about making your apps, you wanna make your app unique, right? You don't wanna make your app boring and look the same as every other iOS app using the, you know, out of the box UI elements. You know, you wanna stylize your app, make it look good. And that's fine, and that's basically what this paragraph says, but don't do it with navigation. I'll read this real quick. Luckily, there are a lot of ways you can make your interface interesting. You can use striking colors, intriguing illustrations, you know, good copywriting, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you can make the feature set brilliantly simple and awesomely powerful. Almost any part of the app can be a good place to add novelty, except for one, Navigation. Navigation is different. Navigation should be boring. And that's kind of basically the whole crux of the article there. Essentially, you don't, you know, if you're listening on the podcast, we're looking at a picture of a bunch of like tab bars on the bottom and how that has become a very common navigation paradigm. And everybody knows how to use it. Everybody is used to it. And that's kind of the point, you know. When users are learning how to use your app, they have a limited like attention span budget. And if you're making them use that up on just basic navigation stuff, you're probably doing it wrong. And, you know, talks about how it can be a slippery slope. You know, while experienced design and development teams will usually tamp down on the worst navigation fever dreams in short order, there's still often the allure or even the explicit pleasure to build out novel navigation patterns, you know, and goes on to say, like, you know, he's quoting somebody, you know, would it be so bad if we just tried to a little horizontal scroll here or just a new gesture there? And what he's saying is it's like a slippery slope, you know, trying one little new thing can lead to, you know, a bunch of other non-normal navigation. And there's some data to back this up, you know, A-B testing, you know, says tab bars get better engagement than hamburger menus. Well, first of all, if you're using hamburger menus in an iOS native app, don't. Just stop. Please, don't do that. Stop. Another nice piece of information here. Boring navigation affordances lead to more navigation and faster navigation than clever ones do. And then he quotes, you know, somebody, obvious always wins. You can't say it better than that. You know, obvious always wins. Don't get tricky when you don't have to. And then the article finishes up talking about, you know, the high price of failure, how Snapchat's UI drama. You know, Snapchat, when they first came out, had this weird navigation, and that was actually kind of its charm to the younger kids because older people didn't know how to use it, so that made it their app. But Snapchat realized that funky navigation was going to limit their, you know, crazy long-term upside, so they went back to a more traditional one. Users revolted, and, you know, I deleted the app then. I don't use Snapchat anymore when they made that big switch. But, yeah, this is it sounds like a small decision, but it can be a big deal. Up next, we have Paul Hudson of Hacking with Swift, starting the 100 Days of Swift, which is meant to answer the question I get 1,000 times, and I'm sure Paul gets it a ton too, is like, how do I start with Swift? Like, what's a roadmap? Like, where do I even begin to learn? And that's what this 100 Days of Swift is. So this was built off the concept, if you've seen the hashtag 100 Days of Code on Twitter, maybe you've seen that. It's kind of built on top of that. But essentially, yeah, Paul is going to... Well, if you're not familiar, Paul has a ridiculously large library of content that he can pull from. And what he's done is he's going to create a 100-day plan based on that content to get you started. As you can see, we're only on day 4 right now because he just started it in February. So if you are just hearing about this for the first time, you're not too far behind. You can get caught up. And the point is to do this for an hour a day, tweet about it with your progress and your updates with hashtag 100 Days of Swift. Follow the hashtag, see everybody else that's doing it, and, you know, start following them, start building your network. You know, I'm big on the network of developers. But yeah, again, he's just going to lay out a good roadmap of how to get started with Swift. As you can see, days 1 through 12 are going to be the introduction to Swift, and, you know, it'll progressively get a little more advanced as it goes. But love the initiative, Paul. You know, again, I get this question all the time. How do I start? Where do I start? And it's always such a hard question to answer. So hopefully now I can just point him to the 100 Days of Swift. Sticking with Paul and Hacking with Swift real quick, the whole month of January, he's been putting out every day a little 20-second video with Xcode tips and tricks. And I've been kind of waiting until everything was done so I can present it as a whole package. So he has done that, part 1, 2, and 3. He provides, you know, 10 tips in each one. But essentially, it's just a quick 20-second video showing off an Xcode tip. And what I like about this is it's not the most common obvious ones, right? So you're probably going to learn something, or it might go over your head, I don't know, but you're probably going to learn something by watching these videos. Again, they're quick 20-second videos. You can see regex searching, faster testing, layout stress testing, opening Xcode. You can see, and there's over 30 of these. So again, 20 seconds each, you can fly through them real quick, and I bet you're going to learn something. Next up, we have a design article from Nick Babich. I featured him a lot. He has a lot of good UX stuff. Follow him on Medium if you're not already. But a checklist for using icons in UI. Now, this is fundamental design stuff, but I think it's good to review the fundamentals because, you know, I always see tons of apps that, you know, even these easy fundamental stuffs, people don't get. So we're going to talk about icons in your UI, and you want to make them easy to recognize, right? What makes an icon great is the fact that its meaning can be understood without reading a label. I always say, like, I hate on the tab bars, like, I hate putting labels on them. I think it looks so much cleaner and better without labels on your icons on the tab bar. And the reason you can do that is by using good icons that are obvious and intuitive on what they do. And I always say, if you have to label your icons, you're probably doing something wrong. So yeah, moving on, you know, try to use icons that are familiar to your users, the typical, you know, home, printer, search, right? Everybody knows what those icons are. Don't try to reinvent the wheel and use different icons for these. You know, don't use icons with conflicting meaning. You know, famously, Twitter switched from favoriting with a star to hearts and likes a bit ago, but they didn't use both at the same time, you know, because that would have been conflicting. Scalability of the icons, make sure it looks good, big and small. This is the exception to that label rule that I was talking about. That's for like the obvious stuff. Now, of course, if you're building a very unique app, you're gonna have functionality that no other app has, you know, then yes, you might need a label for an icon to train the users, but that should be the exception, not the rule. And then continuing on down here, yeah, make them visually pleasing. You know, don't make crazy, weird looking icons. Keep it simple, add some animations, et cetera. There's two more things I wanna talk about. Being consistent, I see this a lot. So you see here, do and don't, like these are all consistent style of icons within the app. I've seen plenty of apps that use totally different icon styles and it's just like, what are you doing? And then here's the big one. The biggest pet peeve is consistency with a platform. I've absolutely seen it in designs and had to like tell the designer, like, what are you doing? I don't know if I've seen it actually make it to an app yet. Maybe I have. Let me know if you have out there, but you know, this Android share button making it into an iOS app would make me throw up in my mouth a little bit. But just be consistent with the platform, right? Don't use Android icons in iOS and don't use iOS icons on Android. So yeah, but anyway, good article by Nick just about the basics of using icons. Again, I always think it's good to go over the fundamentals every once in a while. Next up, we have a tutorial from Jake Shelley, how to build a super quick smile tracking app. And I wanna share this because I think this is a good intro into like ARKit and face tracking and all that stuff. So essentially, like I said, he uses ARKit, face tracking, face anchors to detect when you're smiling. And I'll just get to the bottom to show you the video of it so you can see it in action. So basically, as you're smiling, you're going to show the appropriate emoji based on how big your smile is, right? So again, good intro. If you haven't played with ARKit yet, I think this is a good one to start with. And really, you can see what's going on right here. Here's the crux of it here, this handle smile. So you're going to get values. Again, this is going to come from ARKit. So you're going to have a smile value. And then based on that smile value, the number here, you're going to show the appropriate emoji. So you can see he's only showing like three different emojis based on the smile. You could get really granular to show all kinds of, you know, smile levels if you like. But yeah, again, I just thought this was a fun little thing that somebody could pick up and do in a couple hours to get their feet wet with ARKit and face tracking. Sticking with the ARKit theme, we have a new app called Wanna Kicks. And as you can see from the screenshots, you pick a shoe, pick the color, point the camera at your foot, and then bam, the shoe's on your foot. It's like trying on shoes without trying on shoes. And I said this time and time again, I think retail and shopping is going to be the first killer app for AR. And as you know, you can see why, like this is really, really cool. So I haven't tried this yet, but I want to. Here's the download link to their you know, their app store preview. So you can see, the only downside right now is it is a new app. So there's only, I think, like 10 pairs of shoes that you can try on. But as you can imagine, as time goes on, they're going to be adding a bunch more shoe styles. So give it a try. Let me know what you think. And then finally, our LOLs of the week. We got Nate Swanner here. If you're not following Nate, give him a follow. He's consistently in the LOLs. He posts a lot of funny stuff. This one speaks for itself. You know, computer science student and a senior developer with 10 years experience are Googling the same exact thing. We all do it. We all Google the most simplest stuff each and every day. So if you are new, don't worry about Googling stuff. And then this one speaks for itself, client expectations versus client budget. And I want to go on a little mini rant here about, yes, this is obvious, you know, we've all dealt with this, but where I think the skill is as a developer here, and it's not even developer skills, it's kind of like people skills, is being able to educate that client and have good communication skills to not have this be a detriment to you, right? Because here's what happens. Yes, we all know the client has crazy expectations and a low budget. But that's, I don't want to blame them, right? Because people that don't know how to code or don't know how development works, like they don't understand everything that goes into building these apps and building these software. So like, you know, I've been told time and time again from like a marketing person, just build that screen real quick and we'll be good to go. And I'm like, you just described 2 weeks worth of work. Like, it's not just build the screen real quick. But the skill comes into having the ability to communicate and educate them on why. Because what happens is, if you don't educate the client that has this crazy expectations and a low budget, it's going to look bad on you. They're going to think you suck, right? And they're going to be wrong, but they just don't know any better. So it's in your best interest to help educate them, right? I can hear people saying, it's not my job to educate the client. But again, it is in your best interest, because if you don't educate them, they're going to think you suck when you don't deliver on their horrible budget. So I don't know, just a little mini rant there. That's going to wrap up this episode of Swift News. If you like what I'm doing here, consider subscribing. I put out Swift News every Monday and a tutorial or two throughout the week. We'll see you in the next one. You